So we've been talking the last several weeks about peacemaking and relating to one another in a little bit more appropriate or better way. And we're kind of moving into the last few weeks here of our Peacemaker sermon series and getting into some really practical things. And so this week is going to be really, this is kind of a process to do it, to do some of those kind of things. We've been looking at the book by Ken Sandy, which I, again, don't have this morning with me. It's if you want to look at it, it's in my office. But we've been looking at the four G's of peacemaking. Four G's of peacemaking. There's a couple weeks ago, we started laying the groundwork, and we talked about where instead of being peace fakers or peace breakers, we try to be godly peacemakers. And by doing that, we can give God the glory. That was the first G, glorifying God. And then last week, we kind of came back and said, we need to look at ourselves. We need to look at our own hearts and say, you know, we need to get that log out from Matthew 7 where Jesus says, you know, remove that plank or that log in your own eye before you go and talk to your brother about that little tiny speck in his eye. And so kind of related to that, we're moving on to the third G this morning, which is gently restore. Gently restore, looking again at that idea of how do we go about restoring people that have either walked away or that have we have a strained relationship with. And bring about restoration and reconciliation. And I do want to throw up a disclaimer. This is I'm going to try to toe the line. Because we talk about, you know, judging people and not to judge people. And I know Jesus talks about that and says not to do that. So how can we restore and confront people but also not judge them and attack them? And I think there is a line. I think there is a way that we can try to do that. And a little controversial, I know, in some ways this morning, but if you disagree, this is always going to be my case. I hope that if you disagree, you'll go home and you'll pray about it, or you'll think about it, or you'll come and talk to me. I'm in the office most mornings during the week. Come and talk to me. Come and share your thoughts, how you feel about something. You know, if you want to go and talk to somebody about it at lunch, you know, and share your thoughts and stuff, that's great. But then, you know, make sure it comes back to me if there's something going on that you feel I'm misspoken or whatever. But I feel like this is somewhere that God is leading me that the Bible reinforces as well. So I want to throw that out there just so everybody's kind of on the same page. But sometimes the most difficult task that we have as Christians or as followers of Christ is to measure our role in a conflict. We look at a conflict, we look at a situation, and we have to decide that the process and means by which we restore that relationship, we need to analyze our role in that situation. And sometimes it's pretty obvious. We know we've made a mistake, we know we messed up, and so we know we need to go and we need to do something. But sometimes it's a little bit more muddier. I'm the youngest child, I've got two older brothers, and so it was really easy for me not to take too much of the blame or responsibility at home. Right? You guys, some of you guys are older ones, I know. You guys got blamed for everything, right? The oldest seems to always get it. You know, I know at home, depending upon which number is squawking, I can, without even going into the room, know which one I need to yell at, right? We kind of can blame certain ones. You know, if number three is squawking, most of the time it's number two that's causing the problem. But the fourth one, that little baby, he's getting ornery too. He can get on Silas too. Anyway. But we have those kind of roles where we fit into on a family situation, or we kind of in our marriage, maybe we've kind of developed these roles of how certain people, who's going to respond, who's going to do what in that conflict without maybe even discussing it. But there are times where we feel we need to feel a different role. We need to do something differently because of the circumstances and the situation. I think Ken Sandy summarizes it well here. He says, when I am estranged or separated from someone else, I will ask God to help me discern the most effective way to approach him or her to confess my sin or to show him or her fault, their fault. And again, this is something that we're going to have to toe the line a little bit on, but I think there's so much meaning and power to be able to go and talk to someone to share your hurt and your concerns and the things that are happening in their life. And so the first step, we're going to look at three different areas this morning. And the first area I want to look at is between the two of us, just looking at a relationship between two people, a marriage or a family situation or work or something, just between two people. And when we talk about gently restoring or confronting people, we need to remember that restoring means more than just confronting. Restoring means more than just confronting. A lot of times when we think of confronting, we think of Matthew 18. If you want to flip to Matthew 18, I think you'll recognize the verses. But Matthew 18 kind of gives this process for dealing with conflict, especially between two people, that are having an issue. And in Matthew 18:15, Jesus is speaking here. He says, if your brother sins against you, you go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. But I think this is the most important part of that verse. It says, if he listens to you, you have gained your brother. You have gained your brother. And while, again, there's principles in Matthew 18, if we kind of follow that process, I think those are specific principles for specific situations, and so we need to be careful with that. But at the same time, there's meaning in being able to restore a relationship, restore and reconcile a relationship between two people, but between God and someone else, or even ourselves. The Bible gives us numerous examples that rather than just going and saying, pointing a finger and yelling at someone, there are lots of different ways to kind of encourage people and confront, and I use the word confront, but challenge them in their relationship. I'm not going to take the time this morning where I don't want to labor this point, but in 2 Samuel, read 2 Samuel 12. 2 Samuel 12, the first several verses, that story there, there is a really neat way that the prophet Nathan confronts the King David with some of the things that David had chosen to do and some of the sin in his life. A neat story that he tells and kind of brings it back to him. But 2 Samuel 12, to spend some time in there, I encourage you to do that. But just to leave it at that point, restoring doesn't necessarily mean we always confront blatantly, you know, kind of an intervention kind of idea where, you know, we're confronting people and have a group of people where we're in an intervention. There are other ways to show people where they're at and what's going on. And the second part is part of Matthew 18:15. It says, when someone has something against me. Ken Sandy says, I will go to that person to talk about it, even if I don't believe I've done anything wrong. I will go and talk about it even if I feel like I haven't done anything wrong. And this is probably one of the most difficult things, because we assume, and I think it's a really poor assumption in a lot of ways, we assume that if someone else is at fault, if they've done something wrong, it's their job to come to me. It's their job to come and talk to me and figure out what is going on, to apologize, to make amends, to take the consequences, and all those things. But Ken Sandy makes a challenge to us, especially as followers of Christ, to say, we need to take responsibility for that relationship too. Even if we aren't at fault, even if we haven't done anything wrong, we're a part of that relationship. And finding ways to approach and confront and move forward. And we can have all of our reasons, even really logical reasons for why we're not at fault. But the bottom line is that person is hurt. And that person is, for whatever reason, it's hard to see this. I look at the situations that I find myself, and it's hard to see when someone is angry at you that they're actually probably hurt by someone else or something or even by you. And it's so hard to see that when they're angry and yelling and belittling even in some ways. But they're hurt. And the bottom line is, even if I didn't do anything to hurt them, they're still hurt. And as part of the process of healing and restoring that hurt, we can go and we can talk to them. We can have a conversation. And I've found that if I do that, and I've done this recently, if I go and I do that, it makes the relationship, even if it's not completely restored, it just allows that dialogue to be opened back up. Some people aren't going to accept it. I know there's people out there that are going to just keep yelling and yelling and yelling regardless of our efforts. But we just, again, keep going back and keep continuing to reach out to them. And that's, again, the relationship between two people. But the second point I want to make this morning is we need to speak the truth in love. Speak the truth in love. In Galatians 6, one of my favorite passages in all the Bible, and especially in my favorite book, Galatians 6, verses 1 through 5, tell us this. It says, brothers and sisters, this is the Apostle Paul, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you too may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. They should take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to others. For each one should carry their own burden or their own load. And so when we speak the truth in love, when we go and we you know, maybe are confronting or talking to somebody, we need to bring, first and foremost, bring the hope of the gospel. And what I mean by the hope of the gospel, what I mean by gospel is the message of Christ on the cross. All of our lives, I think, really should point back to the cross, but especially when we're dealing with somebody, when we're working through conflict, when we feel like someone's not living up to what they've said they're going to live up to, or hurting us in some way, the main thing we need to remember is pointing out Christ, his ministry, his life, but ultimately the cross. And so when we confront, when we talk, we remember that we're, and I think that's one thing the cross does for us, we remember that we're in the same boat. We're all sinners, we're all falling short, we all get caught up in messy situations, we're all pretty messed up. And if we remember that, if we remember the cross, we remember we're messed up, we'll remember his forgiveness. And we'll be more gracious, and we'll be more open to the other person, and be willing to hear where they're at. And so we need to bring that gospel. We also need to be quick to listen. Right? That's probably the most difficult thing it's difficult when you have four boys that just are ornery and talking back. It's hard to stop and listen. Why are you yelling at me? Why are you not listening? Anyway, James 1:19 says, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." There are four areas here that I want to kind of point out quick to listen. And the first one is to wait, is waiting. When we don't wait, we make assumptions. There's a story of a photographer for a national magazine, and he's been assigned to take pictures of this great forest fire. And because of the smoke and other situations, he can't get a very good shot. And so he asked his home office to hire him a plane so he can fly over and take pictures from the air. And so arrangements were made, and the office told him to go to the nearby airport, and there would be a plane sitting there waiting for him. So he races to the airport, and when he arrives, he sees a plane was warming up on the runway. And so he gets out of his vehicle, runs over there, jumps in with all of his equipment, and he yells, "Let's go, let's go, let's go." And so they quickly make their way into the air, and the pilot is soon soaring through the air, flying over the forest. And the photographer says, "You know, fly to the north side of the fire, and make a few low passes so that I can take some good pictures." And the pilot looks at him and he says, "Why?" He says, "Because I'm going to take pictures. I need to take pictures. I'm a photographer. Photographers take pictures." After a pause, the pilot said, "You mean you're not the instructor?" Sometimes if we're willing to wait, we don't make quite as many mistakes with our words, with our actions, with people. And so being quick to listen means we wait. But it also means that we clarify. Clarifying means just asking good questions. "I heard that you said this. Is this what you mean? Or I hear that you're saying this." Clarifying, asking good questions, it does kind of two things. One, it makes sure that we understand what they're saying. And two, it shows them that we're caring, that we're actually listening to what they're saying. And along those lines of clarifying is this word is reflecting. So we're clarifying their words, but we're also reflecting. We're kind of this mirror saying, you know, we're reframing, and this is always something I struggled with in school. You know, when you had a paper that you had to write, they said you could use all these different resources, that, you know, the dictionary or other resources and stuff, but you had to rewrite it in your own words, right? They said you had to rewrite it. I always struggled with that. But that's kind of what we need to do in our conversations. Say things again, reword things so that we make sure that we're understanding. We don't have to agree with the person. We don't have to always agree with what they're saying or how they're saying it, but we can just say, this is what you're saying. I hear that you're saying, you know, that this hurt, that this was a situation that you found yourself in. And so we reflect, but then we also agree. And again, this agreeing isn't necessarily agreeing with everything that the person's saying, but it's finding common lines of communication. I can agree that this happened. I can agree that this happened. I can't necessarily agree with how you feel or the other stuff over here, but we at least have a basis for communication. And that's part of being able to be quick to listen. Ken Sandy also says, if we're humble enough to acknowledge when we're wrong, others are much more likely to do the same. If we're willing to admit where we were wrong, others are more likely to do the same. And I guess I found that to be very true. Several situations, several conversations I've had with people, I go in there and I expect to, you know, part of me expects to just go and say, this is everything you did to me, I want you to apologize to me. But that's not, I know that's not an appropriate way to respond to people. So I go in and I apologize for my part of it, where I was at, what I did, you know, where I know I hurt them. Acknowledging their hurt's a big part of that. And I know in almost every situation I can think of, when I apologize for my part, they were quick to apologize for their part and how they were hurt in that situation. And it just opened that communication and that dialogue. And so we're quick to listen, but we're also willing, again, to show their faults. And this is, again, towing the line kind of a thing, but we have to be willing to be able to speak into other people's lives. And there's a story from Dr. Howard Hendricks. And he tells of a young man who strayed from the Lord, from Christ. And he was finally, though, brought back with the help of a friend who really loved him. There was this full repentance, there was full restoration. And Dr. Hendricks, he asked this young man how it felt to be away from the Lord. And the young man gave this wonderful image, this wonderful image. He felt like he was out at sea in the deep water, and he was in deep trouble. And all of his friends were standing on the shore, hurling biblical accusations at him and telling him about all the things that he was doing wrong and the penalty for his wrongdoing. They're standing on the shore yelling it, but he says there was one Christian brother who swam out to me and would not let me go. I fought him, and he pushed aside my fighting, grasped me, put a life jacket on me, and he took me to shore. And by the grace of God, he was the reason I was restored. He would not let me go. And so when we show each other their fault, it's not from the shore yelling accusations and pointing fingers. It's going out into that water. It's going out and being with them. I think that goes back to what Galatians was talking about when it says carry each other's burdens. When we're carrying each other's burdens, we're out in that water with them. We're struggling with them. We're helping them to get back to shore, to restore them. And we do that by drawing first on God's grace, focusing entirely on God's grace so that we can breathe grace into others. Again, the main idea behind, if we're going to talk to somebody about their, if we're going to try to restore people, if we're going to, you know, talk to them about their shortcomings or their faults, the main thing we need to remember, and the only thing, I guess, in some ways we need to remember, is that we're focused on reconciling. Reconciling with us, reconciling that other person with someone else or with God, and focusing on what's best for that person. We're not the moral police. I know I've been a part of churches that feel like it's our job to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. But I feel like that's just, standing out on the shore and pointing the finger and saying they need to do it differently, or they need to do it differently, or she needs to do it differently. And that's not what God calls us to do. He's talking that what we're doing and how we're doing it needs to flow out of a relationship. If we don't know somebody, it's not our job to go and tell them all the things they're doing wrong. But if we have a relationship with them, if we've built that trust, if we've built that community with them, then we have more of that right to speak into their lives. And a big part of it to be able to focus on is to focus on our hurt. And I think of this in my marriage, and I hope this kind of reflects in your marriages too, that we need to be able to, in our relationship, to be able to share where things are happening. You know, if someone's doing something wrong, we need to be able to tell our spouse that it's not being done right. And if we talk about how it hurts us, that's a huge part of the process. And I think I thought of the example where, you know, if a member is of the, you know, the husband, we'll just say the husband because that's easy, and that way I don't get as in much trouble. The husband is out late, you know, regularly, you know, 2-3 nights a week he comes home late, and he's going out and doing whatever, hanging out with his friends or whatever, and he comes home late, and the wife could respond by saying, you're not home ever, and I'm taking care of all the kids, and I'm doing all this stuff, why aren't you here and home, and yelling and belittling and you know, condemning what he's doing. That's one response. But if the wife comes and says, you know, honey, it really hurts when you're not here. It hurts my feelings, and it's harder for me with the family, and it's really a struggle when you're not here for that many nights in a row. And if you focus on your hurt, I think that that response, the husband hopefully is going to respond much better to that hurt rather than the yelling and the screaming and those kind of things. And so we look at being quick to listen as far as confronting, being a way to reconcile and to draw others back into relationship. And so this morning what I want to do, though, is close with something for the church. And that's why I liked the video clip. And I don't know if you guys made the connection right away. My mind kind of does that right away. When he's talking about the cells, you know, and I'm not going to dance for you this morning, but he's dancing up there, moving around, and that cell is coming back to life, and the other cells responding to that. My mind immediately went to the church. And how is the church responding? How is the church working together? The Apostle Paul talks about the church being an organism and being a body and working together. And at the very simple level, and Paul didn't understand cells at his day and age, but we understand cells as being the core and the essential part of the building blocks of our being. And so when he talks about those cells getting back together in those life, I immediately thought of the church. And I think this morning, Ken Sandy in his book gives us a great image for how we develop a culture of peace in our church. And there's a long list. I'm going to go through them quickly, but there's 8 things, and I know that's a long list for us to kind of keep in our minds, but hopefully it at least gives us a helping starting point for where we're going and moving forward. The first thing to remember is we need to have vision. And that's why we're doing this series. That's why we're actually doing a leadership development study on conflict. We want to kind of focus a vision and say, everybody, we're on the same page. We all want to work on this. We all want to do better at our conflict and our relationships. And so we're setting a vision. But then part of that as well is training. Like I said, as part as the leaders, the board and stuff are going through kind of this conflict, we're doing some training and developing ways to do that. The sermon series is a little bit of that too. And how can we develop that? Ways to accomplish this and ways to move forward and training and developing an understanding for peacemaking. The third thing is assistance. And I wanted to make it clear that we want to come alongside you. Myself, the elders, especially want to come alongside you in those situations. We want to assist you in conflicts or in situations where you feel like you need some help or you need some encouragement or even a mediator in that situation. There's assistance available within the church. And then there's also this idea of perseverance. And I know I've been a part of churches, and I've probably been at fault in this to a certain extent. Sometimes it's difficult to persevere. It's difficult to continue and move down the same road, sticking out for the long haul. So often conflict is a huge part. And actually, I would say my experience, probably not a very good number, but I'm just going to throw out like 80 to 90% of problems within the church are just because there's conflict that isn't resolved well. And that's lots of different areas of conflict, but there's, you know, churches split, churches go different ways, and it's usually not a healthy thing. There's conflict and there's ways, and so we don't stick it out, we don't persevere in our relationships. But that also is a part of this is the next one is accountability. Having people that are going to keep us moving forward down the way we need to go, and having the thoughts and the ways that we need to do things. Sharing where we're at, how we're struggling in those relationships, and being accountable to one another. And the next one is restoration. We're getting there. Just a few more this morning. Restoration. Restoration is again the goal. What we want to do is restore relationships, restore people, encourage and uplift, and bring people back into those relationships with one another. And as part of that, especially in terms of perseverance and reconciliation or restoration, is having stability, having things that are stable and continuous. It's so difficult to be a part of relationships, a part of communities, a part of churches that are just ups and downs and ups and downs. And so developing a certain amount of stability, certain amount of continuity can be a huge part of the peacemaking process as well. And lastly, and I think this is something that kind of naturally occurs or can happen just kind of out of all of these other things that we're doing, is this idea of witness. Sharing others, sharing the gospel, sharing the good news, sharing who Christ is as a witness. Because of the peacemaking. I find this out regularly, and I had to chuckle the first time when I came back and I kind of heard third hand, well, maybe at least second hand, of something that I had done that someone else had saw, that someone had told someone else. And it wasn't a bad thing, but I had to chuckle because I forget that happens. It happens, it seems like, more, and not just here, but in smaller communities, that you'll if you're part of the community, if you're doing things in that community, people are just going to, it's going to happen. And I hope my hope is, as far as this church goes and as far as my role goes, that people are talking about us being peacemakers. That we are purposely doing that, that we are reaching out, that we are restoring those relationships, and that's how people see us. And I want to be a part of that. That's what my goal is. If people are going to be talking about me, they may as well be talking about some good things. There are going to be probably be plenty of bad things here in the future too, I sure, but I want there to be a purposeful, positive things as well in our witness. But as we close this morning, I want you to kind of keep in mind that video clip of the cells regenerating. The big guy dancing, I think, is a good image to always remember. But pulling that video and that image in, I want you to also imagine that you're putting together this puzzle. And it's a big, well, to me, it's a big 1,000-piece puzzle. And as you put it together, there's this image is starting to come to life. And you're starting to see this beautiful landscape or a fireworks display or something exciting like that. And when you get it done, you see most of the picture complete, but there are 4 pieces missing. How many of you would get just driven crazy because there's 4 pieces missing in that puzzle? And so when we, after we get it and we're still missing those pieces, all of a sudden we, and this is crazy, I know, but all of a sudden those pieces almost come to life and they start to move around and they start to separate from each other and we refuse to join together. And there's actually a few pieces that decide they're going to hop off the table and run away from that puzzle. And so what you're left with is just a few pieces here and there. The picture is incomplete. And that's frustrating, I think, as a person that does puzzles. But just imagine that you've worked so hard, you've put so much effort in these puzzle pieces, they just won't cooperate. And so I wonder sometimes if that's not how God feels about his church. And maybe that's the church as a whole, but especially looking at just Astoria Christian Church. Are there pieces that he's put into place? Are there situations that he's put into place that just, they're not going to work together? We're not going to communicate. We're not going to work things out. And so we remain an incomplete picture. And to me, that's a great image to remember that I need to do my part. I need to work through my things and work on all my relationships so that my puzzle, our picture can be as complete as possible. Let's pray. Gracious Father, thank you for your Son. Thank you for an opportunity to be led and guided by your Spirit, by your grace. Help us to restore relationships, even if it means we're going to others and talking to them about where they're hurting us or where they're falling short. Help us to do it filled entirely with your grace, entirely with your love. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.